Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 10, Episode 10, titled Stalker. Aaron, what do you think of this episode?
I love this episode. I thought this episode was a pretty stirring return to form. I'm really lamenting the fact that I know basic things about the post-production of several spinoffs, because I would have been shitting bricks through a lot of this episode. Because again, they've done an admirable job of building up the danger. Because just the fact we're so close to the end tells me that, like, literally anyone could die. The fact that they've already written Andrew Lincoln out of the show. Carl, like, there's all these people that that have really amped up the dread. And even still, knowing that, it's very much like a really good episode of Breaking Bad, like mid-season 3. You know Walt and Jesse aren't going to die, but in that second, you're sweating bullets for them. That's the kind of magic that they captured in this episode. And they just keep pulling shit off. Like, that scene, the cold open of, like, Beta stalking into just a regular ass RV with these weird submissive, like, whispers getting on their knees in front of him. And it's broad daylight. There's nothing. It's like the juxtaposition of how, like, ridiculous this is and how out in the open. And he's just, like, hulking in this SUV, like, and then they lift the trap door, and it's in this elaborate cave tunnel system, which is inherently cool. And I feel like The Walking Dead has always struggled with the juxtaposition of how, like, objectively hilarious and ridiculous some of their stuff is, but also if they lean just a little bit further, how cool it is. And this episode epitomizes, like, this Kang era deft ability to walk that line, because I was literally laughing out loud. And then, like, he gets out of tunnels. I'm like, this is pretty fucking cool. And where it went in this episode was just like, the twist and turn this war, just very entertaining. Every time I think the Whisperers are out, or the Alexanders are out, Alexandrians are out, boy, they come right back in. What'd you think?
I definitely had a moment where I was laughing out loud at how ridiculous something was, but not in necessarily a bad way. Like, there's the moment where Alpha's, like, trying to get over to Daryl to kill him or whatever, and she just flops on her face. Like, it's something out of Free Fire, right? Except dumber. I had a lot of fun with that moment. I like the episode. I think there is, like, maybe one moment that I felt didn't connect. It's when they first show Daryl and he's kind of stalking this whisperer. It didn't feel like I had enough context for that in the moment. So maybe, like, director could have grabbed a little bit more footage there. But she's directed Breaking Bad episodes and tons of television. So I don't know. Who I don't know what went on there, but it just didn't feel right.
Who was the director? I didn't even pay attention.
Bronwyn Hughes. A name that I recognize. Directed Crazy Handful of Nothing.
Yeah.
Breaking Bad episode.
They're also, like, this episode bites, and it just is so fresh in mind because I've been going through an Akira Kurosawa kick, because a lot of his famous works are on HBO Max right now. And I found that, I knew that, like, Seven Samurai later got adapted into The Magnificent Seven. So I saw this, like, Eastern influence into the Western genre. But what I didn't know is, like, what a snake eating its own tail was, because Kurosawa's is inspired by Westerns to make these very Western inspired samurai tales. And that led me to watching Yojimbo, which then got later inspired Sergio Leone to make essentially a Western remake of that called Fistful of Dollars. And let me tell you, this episode bites from Fistful of Dollars so hard, but it's great. It's great. Like some of that stuff where, like, the Gamma versus Father Gabriel showdown at the gates of Alexandria, like, there should have been a tumbleweed blowing behind him with, like, the Alpha tanking the bullet with the steel plate right out of Fistful of, or I'm sorry, Beta. Right out of Fistful of Dollars. There's a lot of that kind of, like, and we've seen more and more of that, this kind of, like, Wild West aspect to The Walking Dead. I think it's such a great fit. And just the locations are so much better. like the random filling station, whatever, the Alpha and Daryl had their standoff was cool and believable and a neat set. And the yeah. caves are a neat set and the surrounding areas, like people are paying attention. Like when people are supposed to be sneaky, they give them cover and like terrain that like lets them do the thing. I'm so glad that they're just like doing the basics of like, hey, how can we block this to make it seem like, you know, this is cool instead of stupid, like stuff that like season 7 through 8 of Walking Dead never, ever gave a shit about. It's just, yeah, like I know I've been a little critical of The Walking Dead the last episode and a half or so, but this I thought was a real return to form.
And the other thing they're doing is not just the Fistful of Dollars stuff, but they're leaning, you know, yet further. They always do this when Beta's on the screen, right? But they lead into the slasher thing.
Yes.
And that vest you're talking about, the tanking the bullet, that feels like, you know, the unkillable slasher monster coming after you. They do a lot with that stuff too. So yeah, it's good. It's good. Let's take a quick break and then we'll get into the recap.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that Leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead, unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends, and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
All right, we start off with Beta going to the secret underground Whisperer tunnel. Here's the one other complaint I have. This drone shot is not very good. I thought the drone shots in previous episodes were good. This one feels poorly done.
What, in what way? Because I guess I didn't pick up on it.
It's just something about, like, there's a quality to the drone shots where, like, the stability isn't there, or they're, like, going too fast and they have to, like, move the camera too much to get the shot they want as they pass their target. Right. I don't know what it is exactly, but it just doesn't feel as professional as previous drone shots have.
Yeah, like I said, this whole concept of this elaborate, you know, zombie underground railroad is a very cool concept, and it answers so many questions that we've had about, like, I'm starting to think that the Whisperers never left. They just go in the wintertime. They just go into caves.
They could.
Yeah. Where it's always 55 degrees. It's also a great way to keep your zombies, like, preserved as long as you can, I imagine. Like, you know, keep them in that cool 50 degree moist cave air is going to make them last a lot longer than just being exposed to the sun all the time. So, like, you understand it, like, maybe she keeps them in these caves all the time and just had them out in the valley as a show of force, just to, like, impress upon the Alexandrians what they were dealing with. I don't know. Like, it's like, I remember thinking, and I even said this in the podcast last year, it's like, man, there's some stuff at the margins of this that doesn't really make sense. I'm just kind of going, and I hope as we go and we find more about the Whisperer culture and how they do things, that this stuff starts to make sense. And by God, it's starting to make sense. Now, it kind of is fantastic and ridiculous. I don't know. There's these giant cave systems throughout, like, Maryland and Baltimore and the greater DC area. But maybe they are. I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe with the, you know, if you've got, like, essentially hundreds of people with, like, slave labor, you know, we know what kind of tunnels and monuments you can build with that. Look at the pyramids and whatnot. So, like, Alpha can accomplish a lot. And also, like, their numbers might be way more vast than we know. That's another question we've had.
Yeah, could be.
I just think that the stuff is really clicking. And also, Beta looks so ridiculous in broad daylight in his full zombie get up, just stalking around and menacing these fellow. It's really very, very cool and very funny.
Yeah. They all kind of look ridiculous. Those skin masks.
In broad daylight, it's bad. It's very hot, you know, Halloween Town, you know.
Yep.
Spirit of Halloween, whatever the Halloween store is.
So Rosita has a nightmare where a Whisperer breaks into her home and kills Coco during the night, and she wakes to hear Gabriel on the radio. She's got a bit of a premonition here. She's worried that the walkers, or the Whisperers rather, are going to sneak in and start killing people, and that's exactly what happens in this episode. And, you know, she's also trying to deal with Sadiq's death and her new role as, like, sole caretaker, because holy shit, asshole Gabriel. In this dream, and I guess this is Rosita's subconscious saying, I'm the only person who can take care of this baby now, because in her dream, Gabriel, she's like, hey, it's your turn to take care of Coco, and Gabriel just rolls over and is like, so she gets up and takes care of Coco. She's thinking, man, I'm the only one around who's going to take care of this child.
Yeah, she feels really isolated. This is an interesting episode for her, because I don't think they've done great things with her character. You know, we talked about it in this season, but this is the one thing I think they're doing really well. And, like, as far as the premonition, I paused and I looked real close. I thought they're implying that walker that stabbed the baby was Dante. And it's also kind of cool that it was Dante's grave that the Beta popped out of this episode. So, like, you might be onto something about that.
They take his body.
That's what I was wondering. They must have.
But, oh, maybe we're going to see Dante skin mask later.
Oh, right. Up. It's like something that they do as part of their rituals. And we're starting to see more and more of that. Like, you know, some of their belief systems, you know, like when you're killed, you never really die. You're going to go walk with your sister again, or you're going to be a guardian. It doesn't sound so bad. They have an afterlife that's satisfying, you know? Yeah, it's some good stuff. And I thought that the baby killing scene was so brutal that, like, I actually thought it was real. It got me, like, you know, like, I guess I'm a sucker for that. But yeah, a man with a big butcher knife killing a baby. It's like put me right back to The Witch, you know.
I mean, they're like, they're, oh God, baby killers or baby leaders at least.
Well, we know they don't have conventional human morality, which makes them really unpredictable and dangerous.
Yeah. All right. Gamma's at the gates. She tells the Alexandrians that their friends are in a cave with the Horde. They question why she'd want to help them. And she tells them that the baby is her nephew and his mother is dead. Gabriel pretends to trust her long enough for Rosita to punch her out. And she calls her a liar, telling the rest of them to throw her in the cell.
I have a question. When did Father Gabriel become a badass? Because he looks so damn cool in this episode with his like grim face and his like milky eye and that preacher hat pulled way down low. Like, it is very much a Fistful of Dollars kind of joint. And the Alexandrians appear smart and tough here. You know, they're not rubes. They're not people that are just going to trust openly because they're stupid and they're naive. And Gamma's getting all that. I don't know how I feel about Father Gabriel's lie detector. I hope that steers him wrong at some point, because that's horseshit. But on the other hand, I do believe that people like himself and investigators that do hear lots of confessions and lots of people lying to them, I bet you do get pretty good at sussing out the 99th percentile of lie from truth. But it's real cool. I hated, like, I remember like two seasons ago saying there's nothing they can do to redeem this character. But no, man, just make him look real cool, give him some cool dialogue, put him with some cool characters, and not make him just be, oh my God, I turned my back on my flock, you know, for like a season and a half, and there he's rehabilitated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, Daryl stalks some whispers to the cave entrance where he sees them leading the Horde out. This is a scene where I was like, oh, they need a little more context here. They need maybe Daryl sneaking up and seeing one of these guys before, or like show him going through the woods. And how did he detect that this was the entrance? Like, I don't know.
See, I thought that this is a place where they had done battle the previous day.
It might
be like, and he was like staking out as like a trap. And then, cause I thought he was going to go and knife this guy or take him prisoner and interrogate him. But then he sees like a progressively, oh, well, this guy's got a shotgun and oh my God, this is Alpha. And he like instantly changes plans to like reconnaissance mode rather than capture and interrogate mode. But you're right. There's no dialogue to establish that. It's just kind of like, because I remember thinking like, what is Daryl doing? Oh, Daryl's doing this. Oh, Daryl's going to have to do this.
I remember thinking like, how did Daryl get here? Like last we saw him, he just ran off into the woods to find another entrance. And I don't know, just it's picked up like two already in it for me.
Right.
But, you know, small complaint overall.
This is where I was talking about like using the locations. Like I feel like for many, many years, The Walking Dead is just like they had 100-acre woods. And it's like, well, let's go to this corner to film the action today. It's just got some trees, flat. OK, roll them. I mean, this is like Daryl's got an embankment to hide behind and a ridgeline to kind of stalk and be in cover. And the way that like the camera stays over his shoulder. And so as he goes up, we get to see what he like. It's I can't stress how fucking 101 cinema this shit is. But the fact that this show has been unable to do it for like four seasons is maddening to me. And it's so much more satisfying and better now that they're doing it. This whole thing is just like. Yeah, like it was fun seeing him like, oh, you got to drop in the one guy. Oh, there's two. Daryl could probably still take him. Three. Oh, shit. There's Alpha. It's cool. It's exciting. It's exciting to watch. Holy shit.
Mm-hmm. Gamma wakes up in the cell. Rosita and Gabriel tell her that she's lying about something. So Gamma confesses to killing her sister for Alpha. And Gabriel, the human lie detector, believes her. This is a good scene. We talked about how badass Gabriel looks, but he's got maybe the best line in a long time. The best line I can remember in Walking Dead, where she's like, you know, you're a man of God. you know, what, you're going to do this? And he's like, I've spoken to God. He told me to hang you.
I'm like, oh, and the delivery. Wow.
Yeah, his delivery is great.
Seth. Plus, like, he's like floating in inky blackness of the jail cell. He looks like he's on like a fucking Queen cover with this black hat, this milky eye. It's like,
yeah, they're shooting room from the side to where you get like, yeah, it's, and he's looking through the bars. It's great. I am a servant of God.
I have taken many confessions. Yeah. And like, yeah, I spoke to God. He told me to hang you. Oh, man. It's so good.
There was like, this line almost feels like a schoolyard bully trying to get under your skin, but like, you got to prove to us you're different from the ones who lie, who walk with the dead, eat worms. Like, did they? I guess they would eat worms. They probably eat a lot
of different shit,
but like, it just, it sounded so silly. And then they follow it up with the other awesome line, and I'm like, okay, all right.
They get it all Hakuna Matata. It felt this dialogue felt very biblical, which I think suits Father Gabriel very well. And then when she confesses that she's the one that killed her sister, I thought this is just a great scene. And she's like kind of like unpacking it, like, and Alpha didn't even have to tell me to. I just did it because I knew that's what's expected of me. That's what I had to do. And she's like, do you believe me now? And he just kind of like just that like nod. Like it's very Clint. I mean, I've got a gif of Clint Eastwood doing that nod.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So like, but it fucking works, man. Father Gabriel on the map. As large and in charge here in Alexandria.
Gabriel and Rosita. Wait, no, sorry. While the Whisperers are leading the walkers away, Daryl manages to sneak up and kill some of them, but he's partially blinded by his own blood and the walkers begin to creep up. So he has to let Alpha go after injuring her, and he gets stabbed in the leg in the process. There's a whole sequence of close calls for everybody, I guess.
This is so well staged and exciting. Yeah, I mean, it's been a minute since we've seen Daryl. Well, I guess since he beast moded Beta in last season, fought him to a draw. I mean, he's just a fucking Tasmanian devil with those two knives going around. And like, it's just like you felt for the first time the Whisperers were the prey. Like he picks one off in the arrow and he goes down screaming and the whole herd gets like distracted by that. And then he's hamstringing guys and then blinding him. Like I've seen this kind of POV trick with like, you know, people being partially blinded by blood, but this is about the most well done one I've ever seen, where like it really felt like Daryl was incapacitated, but he could just barely see like Alpha and tracking her and like swinging wild with this stick, then sees she picks up the shotgun. Now the tables have turned. He's got to dash off like. Fuck, I mean, yeah, this is really well staged action and exciting and well done.
Yeah, I thought so too. And you know, he doesn't know the fate of Connie and Magna exactly yet, and so he doesn't want to kill Alpha, which is probably what he should just do.
Right.
So there's like that tension too. Is he gonna, you know, is he gonna keep her alive or let her go so that he can escape the walkers, or is he gonna kill her and maybe lose his friends and Connie, who might be more than a friend. It's good.
Yeah, that Batman moment where he's like, where are they?
Yeah.
But he knows like the zombies are only 30 feet away. So like, you know, him and Alpha both know like, what, are you just going to kill me?
Mm-hmm.
Because I can last for 30 seconds. And like his mounting frustration. And it's good. It's very, again, simple staging stuff and stunt work. But it was very exciting. And again, if you're watching this live, potentially not knowing like, you know, for sure, like who lives and who dies in these episodes, like this must have been just on another level. Yeah
it was a bit of a letdown knowing that Daryl was not going to die in this episode.
but
it was still exciting, like you said. So Gabriel,
it's much more relaxing because I would have been significantly more like on the edge of my seat and oh my god, had I not known that. So you know, this is let me kind of like, well, this is cool. I'll just watch it.
All right. It's a lot like those slasher movies where you kind of just don't care about the main characters. You're like, yeah, kill them all. I don't know. How are you going to do it? Put them in a sleeping bag, bash them against a tree. Go for it. Sounds awesome.
Not with Daryl, man. I still.
Well, not in that way, but in the way of like, the consequences aren't there, right? The stakes aren't very high because you know he lives.
Tunes, yeah. They're slightly Wile E. Coyote here.
So Gabriel and Rosita plan the cave raid with Gamma's help, And after getting info from her, they send her back to her cell. Rosita's still skeptical, but Gabriel tells him not to be afraid of the Whisperers because they're cowards. He thinks he can break them all with enough pain and fear. And I would say he goes a little overboard with his enthusiasm here.
This is the one flaw of the episode is I don't know where this came from, because I was like, yeah, you broke, but you didn't break them by pulling their teeth and breaking their fingers and working the ends together. You broke them by like showing how bankrupt their ideology is compared to yous. Cause I thought I thought the point that Rosita made when in between Father Gabriel spitting fire, where she's like, it's like, well, what if I don't? And she's like, well, then you die. No torture, no games, no second chances. Like, that's the difference between Alexander. Like, you know, they're not mean spirited or they're not going to like enjoy doing it, but you're gonna die because they got what it takes to survive. Yeah. And I don't know. Like, I thought this episode did a really good job of also I was back and forth. Like, is this a much larger plan? Like, is this a Joker level Heath Ledger kind of like double triple cross that she's pulling off? I thought it was plausible that just and it made credence of the Alexanders being torn between Father Gabriel being certain that this is the true deal and Rosita like, I don't know, like, why do we just assume this is all real? It was great to watch.
No, you want to be cautious for sure.
Why do you think Gabriel, was he being kind of metaphoric or hyperbolic or just kind of hyping people up? Or like, it was just like, blood drunk kind of talk, because it didn't seem to follow.
Yeah. I mean, ever since, is it Sadiq's death that pushed him over the edge? I'm trying to remember the exact moment, because
that's
there
when
is an
he
exact
started
moment.
Taking.
Yeah.
That's when he started taking matters into his own hands.
Yeah.
And then him and Rosita were simpatico. Exactly. Just unilaterally. And they even mentioned that in the interrogation scenes, like, you killed blah. And he's like, no, I did. But him and Rosita are kind of very on the same page about that. And now they're a little bit off. But I feel like all that got resolved in a pretty satisfying way by the end of the episode. In a way that, like, this. Can I just stop and say the other thing in the last two episodes or three episodes, like, this girlish flirtation with Eugene is so wildly out of character with this Rosita, like,
especially,
you know,
right,
what I mean?
Now. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't know where the fuck they were going with that.
They're going to have back to it, too, because they left it unresolved. Right.
I hope it's just an awkward way for them to become out of the friend zone and into just genuine friends with Eugene getting Twitter pated with the, ham lady.
Yeah, I mean, I know that, Coco is probably going to need another parent around. Like, Rosita is clearly uncomfortable being the only parent to this child. Gabriel's clearly not interested, right? He's off on his bloodlust adventures.
I think they bring Eugene? Him back around by the end of the episode. Eugene might be the second daddy.
I mean, he's timing out like feedings and stuff.
Yeah,
and
but
temperature
it's so
milk.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. The way you do that is Linda Hamilton, Terminator 2, her looking at Arnold standing guard in the gas station for 24 hours and realizing that he's the perfect man because this is a crazy world and this is the eternal protector, and he'll always check the baby's shits and temperatures, and he'll, you know what I'm saying? It's not like Linda Hamilton being like, in this light, this killing machine's kind of cute.
Yeah.
That's stupid. Rosita does not do that
shit. The way the light glints off his mullet is not actually as bad as I thought.
Yeah. Like, nah, that was doing her dirty. That was horseshit. And I hope they just drop it. I hope that this is just like, cause this is yet another thing to sober Rosita up. That was all fever talk.
A serious case of the shits while she was doing all that. So maybe.
Right. Yeah. She's being poisoned by Dante.
Yeah.
But still, God damn that. Yeah. Like, Eugene makes a lot of sense in that role.
Yeah.
It's just, no, not in the other role.
Right. Yeah, they need to do a little more work to get them there. I'm not going to really be thinking, oh, okay, that's a nice thing if they try and do this next episode, but they could bring it around. I could see that.
Yeah.
All right. Daryl's hiding from Alpha, who has a shotgun now, and she's hunting him into this burned out garage, this auto shop, filling station, whatever. She decides she's going to draw some walkers to their location, which is brilliant, right? Because she's got the mask, she's got the shield. He doesn't. She's going to force him to move, reveal his location, and potentially get eaten.
Yeah. This set felt like it's literally pulled out of one of The Last of Us. I feel like I have knifed a couple of raiders in this here gas station.
I'm looking for the pill bottles. I'm looking for the, the cloth.
I want to see the nails. Nuts and screws. Yeah. It's such a great, believable location. And the zombies looked amazing. You know, the like rib cage look like this.
Oh,
is like
the mushroom zombie is awesome.
The mushroom zombie. Yeah. Speaking of, I'm telling you, these references are deliberate pulls. And that's great because these are very successful. Like, yeah, Sergio Leone Westerns, The Last of Us video games. This is great intellectual property to pilfer for ideas and stuff. But yeah, like I thought that shroom zombie with almost like it's got armor plating the way it was. Yeah. Like he looks like a pit gladiator with one of those like shield arms
is
on him.
A pauldron? Is that what those are called? Shoulder armor?
Mm-hmm. It's very, very cool and very tense because, Alpha can call the zombies. And I like how like most of them ignore him, but she kind of has like a face off. It was a calculated risk on her part.
So I watched this thing twice, but I didn't take note of this a second time around. I meant to. Did she crawl into this walker's face?
It's unclear because I rewound it and I couldn't tell if the zombie defiantly growled at her or she defiantly growled back or it was simultaneous or what, because it was a lot of in your face. I'm going to eat your face. I'm going to eat your face. You know,
well, we've seen them communicate with walkers before, right? So
they do,
you know, maybe not communicate, but facsimilate these walkers' noises.
Yeah, it reminds me of Diane Fossey, like Gorillas in the Mist, kind of like, you know, like how do you deal with a charging gorilla? And if you've been around these guys enough that you're there, it's still a serious situation, but they're a master at it.
How do you deal with the charging gorilla? You charge back.
Well, no, you assume a very submissive posture, like
shotguns.
Get on the ground, kind of like growl, and you know, and yeah, just kind of like give up because you're not going to fight a gorilla.
Rocket launcher.
If you're armed, then let's go bring it on. You know, you got like a 10-foot spear. Yeah, fucking face that.
Ooh, I'll take a gorilla with 10-foot spear.
See what I'll do against the. But yeah, you got like a saw or a grenade launcher.
Wait. Not like a handsaw, not like a hacksaw, right?
No, like a squad automatic weapon.
Yeah.
But where were we? I feel like I had other things to say about this. Oh, yeah, I don't know. Like it's again basic stuff, but like the fact that like Alpha and Daryl don't have all the time in the world here because they have the like distant growls that get louder and louder that kind of puts a clock on the situation. It's just very good at building the tension between two people that are almost mortally wounded.
What I really like about this scene and scenes that they've shown us in the past, but I haven't realized it in those scenes, is the sort of symbiosis that the Whisperers have with these walkers, right? Like they have
absolutely
really become part of the herd, part of the horde. And it's not just like they're using them as weapons, but they're also using them as defense. Like that scene where Daryl is threatening Alpha, saying, "Where are my friends?" Those walkers are coming to defend her because she's one of them, right? It's not like consciously, but that is effectively what's happening here. And in this case, she's calling in her buddies for backup to help find Daryl and kill him. It's the way they have painted how well these groups work with the horde is really cool.
Yeah, and it goes into their psychology and their belief structure. Yes. Like Beta later talks to Gamma. It's like, what was the thing he said? It's like, you were dead when we found you. Implying that like if you hadn't joined us, we would have either killed you or the zombies would have killed you. So like you're metaphorically dead. And if you know, and if you're really dead, it doesn't really materially change your conditions within our tribe. It is insane. And I wouldn't
for sure
want to live into that system. But it's interesting how kind of it all reinforces because, you point at symbiote. I haven't really thought about this, but this is a lot like those crabs that like grab anemones that attach their claws, or like the clownfish that hide amongst the anemones. They adapt to each other. It's not like the anemone. Is that how you pronounce that? Anemone. It's not like they're protecting the fish or the crab. They're doing what they do naturally. Yeah. But the crab and the fish have adapted to take advantage of those natural, you know, defenses. It's a really cool ecological way to look at it.
All right, Gabriel and Rosita gear up. Gabriel's itching for a fight, but Rosita doesn't really want one.
Yeah, because, you know, she's confessed about her fear about freezing to him before, and he's seeing that. But she's also defensive because she's badass Rosita.
Yeah.
So she throws back, well, you're erratic. What about all that fucking breaking fingers and pulling teeth? And he's like, well, what if I like it. Like, these are, I feel like adults having conversation. Well, I'm spoiling for a fight. What of it?
It might be dumb. It might get us killed. You know, right. I mean, there are a lot of questions. Like, how much can this community take before they break, or before they say, you know what, whatever we've got here is not worth it. If we're going to lose it anyway, we might as well go out swinging. Let's go take the fight to them. Gabriel's there. The rest of the community seems to be riding alongside him. So,
yeah, we'll
see how this goes.
And I also love how the conversation ended with Rosita kind of like, you know, having a little breakdown and being like, I can feel Coco wondering where he is.
Yeah.
And like her and Gabriel, like, OK, we'll see you out there. Like, that's what this is really about. That's what all the worry is about. And I feel like in earlier seasons, this scene would have been 30 seconds longer. And Gabriel's like, who? And she'd have been like, you know, Sadiq, who was killed a couple episodes ago. You remember?
Yeah.
But like they don't
remember who killed him. How did he die?
Right. Yeah. Or like Gabriel had an insane hard on, jealousy hard on for him. And, you know, like I just like this because it's good adult dialogue for people who fundamentally trust and respect and love for each other. Well done, Walking Dead.
All right. Judith starts up a prison window conversation with Gamma to ask about her past. She doesn't remember much, though, thanks to Alpha's brainwashing. Here's a scene, and I've been feeling this the whole episode, but this is the scene where it really came into clarity for me. Thora Birch is almost too good of an actor to be in this show. Like, every look from her is so full of weight, so full of emotion and something behind those eyes that, like,
she's very good.
Even when you get guys like Jeffrey Dean Morgan, even when you get guys like Andrew Lincoln or Danai Gurira, like, maybe they aren't given the material. Maybe they're, you know, they just punch the clock every week at some point. Mm-hmm. But Thora Birch being on this so recently, it's like she's showing up to work ready to go. Because holy shit, I mean, she's an actor, right? Like,
some of this stuff, these performances, and they've always had great actors, but now they're actually given mm-hmm. something that makes a lot of sense and challenges them. I mean, you get glimpses of what the Darabont series would have been like. I mean, I don't think it'd been quite this, although I do wonder how much of this stuff is from the comic book. Like, I'm giving Kang a lie, but maybe they're just like, hey, let's just, you know, like this underground zombie railroad from there is like all these tunnel systems. Did the comics go into their culture and all that kind of stuff? But like, even if they're just adapting what's in the comic books, that's something again that the show was incapable of doing for many, many years. So, it's good. And it's funny too, because like, we always thought that Thor, I think when she first shambled onto the screen, we're like, I bet she's got a much bigger role, because like, you don't bring in Thora Birch, even if she hasn't been doing a lot of work of late, to this show for like a couple episodes and kill her off.
Yeah. Like Angus Sampson, right? You're not bringing in the writers here.
Right. I think now the trajectory seems like she's going to be a new cast member, which this show desperately needs, you know, like they need some, you know, a couple more familiar faces.
I hope she hangs around for season 11. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Although she also could, like, you know, end up dying heroically or something, or she could be re-corrupted. I mean, I don't know, man. This show keeps surprising me because I didn't think there'd be this many interesting, you know, I was like, man, how are they going to keep this Whisperer War interesting for another season? and they keep doing it, man. Like, Alpha's attacks against the settlements are a lot more insidious and clever than I gave them credit for. And the community's response are usually kind of smart and well proportioned. It's just that Alpha's there to take advantage of it. Like, I don't think Gamma, that's the other thing. I don't think Gamma's a deep undercover agent.
No.
But then we have Gaddante.
Right.
So
I don't know. Maybe I'm getting tricked by the performance here, but everything about that is so like grounded and honest right. feeling that maybe I'm getting suckered. But
and Dante might have been an interesting misdirection because he was always kind of like gave us flashes of like, there's something wrong with this guy. We're not sure what it is his deal is, but he doesn't respect boundaries. He doesn't right. do this. He doesn't do that. Maybe Thor Birch is the better version of that. But because my point is, there's two pretty crazy possibilities. Number one, Alpha's so quick on thinking of her feet that she could set up an elaborate ambush and counterattack based on just, oh shit, Gamma's going to them with the information of where her hoard is. Or she's got a deep cover agent capable of this kind of sophistication and attack. Either way, it's pretty impressive, right?
Yeah, I guess my question would be the reason, like what probably the biggest reason that I don't think she's an undercover agent is because of the way that she deals, that her and Beta interact. There's clearly, I don't know why you have those scenes in the cell where he's trying to coax her back to the you know fold here if she is an undercover agent who's doing just on a mission.
But that's the kind of stuff, so I don't know, I used to read Tom Clancy's stuff, and a lot of his spy things were like cribbed from actual history, and some of the stuff that happened in the Cold War where like a highly placed asset who felt like he was very near to be burning would let one of his spy acolytes that they have trained burn him, leading to certain death, knowing that that would propel the acolyte to ever higher and be like beyond trust and suspicion because they're the one that brought the arch spy to justice. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes it's wheels within wheels, and you do it precisely because the other side says, there's no fucking way that this is a setup. How could someone possibly take these actions? It doesn't, sometimes that's the stuff that is really crazy.
If someone had seen this conversation between Beta and Gamma, I would have believed, you know, maybe potentially believe that, but I don't know why they have this private conversation that is.
Well, that's what. Oh, sorry. That's the other half is I don't know that Beta knows in the way that I don't think Beta and Gamma knew about Dante. And I don't think that, like, I think Gamma's telling the truth about not knowing about the herd being moved. Like, I think Alpha is able to, like, make these plays because they are in this extreme kind of death cult, and they would only work. Like, yeah, like, it wouldn't work in any other kind of society, but she can have these secret kind of, like, crazy-ass plans where she spends these people's lives cheaply. I don't know. I just like some of the stuff. I just think it's like, yeah, like either way, it's kind of next level. Like Alpha really thinks and fights quick on her feet, mm-hmm. or she's got these deep, deep undercover machinations. And we know she's capable of both.
Yeah, so, we haven't really gotten to like the plan here, the retaliation right. from Alpha, but it is really smart.
Yeah.
And it works really well. But let's take a quick break and we'll come right back.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
All right, the walkers close in on Daryl's location and he's forced to kill them using the knife in his leg, which he has to pull out, and it makes him bleed a lot.
That arterial spurting was, again, I would have been thinking if I was like, oh, God, Daryl's going to die. Like, it keeps looking worse. It keeps looking worse. Mm-hmm. That's a bad sign. It's losing a lot of blood, man. And I know he's Daryl, but yeah.
If we'll keep moving, there's a herd apparently that's headed toward the gates of Alexandria. Some people, one of their outlooks, calls on the radio and says it. So Gabriel volunteers Rosita to stay behind as he goes off with the team to deal with that. He kisses her goodbye, leaves his hat with her, and heads out. And I thought, oh God, he left his hat just like Rick left his hat.
Oh no,
for Carl. Yeah, he's not coming back, but I guess, yeah, he made it.
Yeah, it was cool. I also like the fact that Gabriel, because this would be overstepping your bounds in most situations, because they talked about this. Rosita said she wants to go out, and he just switches around, but he could see her zoning out and starting to, like, enter that traumatic fugue state. And instead, he jumps in and calls an audible, and she recognizes it. And that's the other thing I thought was cool is, like, you know, 50-50, she could be like petulant about it, but she's like, no, you made the right call. And also, I like how she came to the conclusion herself. It's like, why are both of you out here? Like, if you both die, then who's Coco got? Like, doesn't she need at least one parent left? You know, like, draw straws if you have to. Mm-hmm. But Gabriel's the one spoiling for the fight, and you're the one that's freezing up in combat. So I again, great adult situation. I thought this was a very tricky situation, handled well, and Rosita handled it well, and you know, again, cinema 101 stuff, but the montage of them getting ready and loading shotgun shells and sharpening axes and all that stuff is just, you know, it gives a great way of ramping up the tension in the scenes.
Yeah, you mentioned the difference in the mental state between Rosita and Gabriel, right? He wants to fight, she's freezing up, and you know, the exact opposite is true about the physicality of those people, where Gabriel is not prepared for the fight, in my opinion. He's a town council member and a preacher. I don't know that he's ever picked up a weapon in his life. And then you've got Rosita, who's been kickboxing and training with weapons and out there clearing. She knows what's up when a fight comes, and she's the one staying behind. So there's like this funny irony about the physicality versus the mentality of these people.
Oh, that was really like Father Gabriel killing Dante. We talked about what a threshold that was for him.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of like, yeah, he's ready. He's mm-hmm. not going to let this relationship, this child, this city be torn from him by these people without a fight. And he's found his spine. It was buried in the inky black well of that fucking hat, apparently.
All right. This next scene, boy, I don't know where to break this up. I'm just going to kind of go through the whole fight in the whole Alexandria happening here. And maybe, you know, if you want to talk about more of it, stop me. But here we go. So Beta emerges from the tunnel behind the cold, rolled walls of Alexandria. He begins sneaking into houses one by one, murdering his way through town, I think. Or maybe he just sneaks into a couple houses. It's hard to tell. It takes a minute, but outside the gates, Gabriel realizes they've been tricked. And so they're going to rush back to town as Beta is in this house, killing people, creating an army of the dead. Which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, I actually want to stop because I thought when they open up on this scene of the grave and moonlight, it's so fucking Hammer horror.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, man, they almost made me want to think that like that ground's going to start upheaving. And I'm like, did Gabriel forget to like knife Dante in the head or some stupid shit like that? Uh-huh. And then when Beta pops out, I'm like, oh, because I connected to him going into the tunnels in the beginning. And I'm like, you know, this Alexandria's best thing is the cold rolled steels. You know, mm-hmm. like the walls have always been, as long as the walls hold, you're safe. And the Whispers are taking that from them. It's such a cool concept. And the way they filmed it is just classic 80s zombie rising from the grave.
Exactly.
Then the I love the way they filmed Alexandria's talking shit about the Whispers. Oh, these guys are all cowards. I beat Lydia's ass and she's just a scared little girl. And then you see Beta blow that lantern out and these guys die screaming. And then the extreme outside view of him, like you're seeing through the windows and he's stalking them with these big knives. It's like you said, it's a perfect homage to these slasher flicks and these zombie films. And it works both as like homage, parody, and just a really cool, gripping scene.
And the music is doing a lot of heavy lifting, too. I really like the music in these scenes. I assume Bear McCreary is still doing the score on this.
I haven't
stuff.
Checked, but yeah, let's just give him the credit. Sure.
Sure. It's really good. And that's true of the whole episode, but I really noticed it in these scenes.
They really turned it up. And it takes a little bit that these were like essentially B squad Alexandrians. There wasn't a single person that we really care about. Yeah. In fact, most of the people we hated because they've been beating up Lydia and all that kind of stuff. But still, you know, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
And when I realized his plan, when he like sat, like got on his knees and just waited, and I'm like, oh shit, he's actually, like you said, building an army of the dead.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And they're smart. You know, they have like a very tactical mind too. These Whispers, even Beta, a guy who's a follower, right? Down to his name. He's essentially doing in microcosm what Alpha was doing in macrocosm, right? There's this like Alpha is distracting them with a fake herd and using Beta to go in and create an army of the dead. Well, he's like using the distraction that she made. I don't know. It's all part of the same plan, but it felt like there were layers to it that really unfolded in a cool way.
Yeah. There was plans that were happening and yeah.
Yeah. So the town's distracted with the army, like we said, and Beta pays Gamma a visit in her cell. They're arguing when, Tats, I don't know. What's her name?
Prison Tat. She still hasn't earned a name, although she might, because I actually found myself a little bit. No, Prison Tat. No, she's being dashed against the.
Wow.
Yeah, I've gotten used to her face. I haven't given her a name yet, but another season. Sure. I'll be sad when she dies. Do you think she's dead?
I forget how they leave that. I think she is dead, actually.
I mean, he picks her up and just full force slams her into those cold rolled steel bars.
And if you look at her laying on the ground, there's a lot of blood coming out of her head.
She looks very crumpled. Looks like a squash bug. Yeah.
I think Prison Tats might be dead. But yeah, she sneaks up, tries to, you know, put a weapon to his neck, and then Gamma gets out of there. But
that's
Beta
the thing
takes
is like
weapon,
how like brave the Alexandrians were, like Prison Tat, even the former savior, like she, like once he gets the axe from her, she's got no, I mean, this guy's literally three times her size, and he beats her down once and then he tries to go after Beta and she goes at him like a spider monkey. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like if this is the way you go out, respect.
Sure. So he stalks Gamma to a house where he finds the end of Judith's gun, the end of the python.
Rick's python strikes from beyond the grave or beyond the AB facility. Yeah, that was fucking cool, man.
But then I, she shot him, and I'm like, okay, now walk up, shoot him again, right in the head, make sure this motherfucker is dead, like you need to do in every horror movie, otherwise he's gonna get up. And what happens? He gets up, Beta survives, he has to fight Rosita, which actually goes his way, and he's about to kill her when Gamma stops him and puts a knife to her throat. This is a little silly in my opinion. I don't know.
It worked for me. It worked for me because he's Beta. Like, it wouldn't work for almost every character, but over season and a half, they've carefully constructed this guy to, like, he is so afraid of failing the letter of Alpha's law that this fucking works.
Yes. It's always borderline when someone threatens themselves with a knife to their throat, but you're right. You're right. It does mostly work. She threatens to kill herself, thereby, you know, making him fail his mission for Alpha. So he spares Rosita and he takes Gamma back to the camp. But before they can get there, he's jumped by Gabriel's crew and then he's scared off and they decide they're going to let Gamma live.
I want to go back to the Rosita fight because I thought that was good. Like, she has this like savage tooth machete that she like almost guts him with. And, you know, she's fighting like a mama bear. And then, I don't know, Gamma stepping forward and, you know, saying, stop, step towards me, like reversing the shit, like felt very, you know, Eowyn taking off her helmet. And I am no Manning, the Witch King in Lord of the Rings. Like, it's like a fucking moment. They filmed her heroically from the floor at like knee level, looking up to her, and there's light streaming behind her. Like, she's the fucking angel of life swooping in here. It's great. It's good. And it's legitimate. I cannot tell you again how legitimately exciting it was, because I'm like, fuck, they could kill Rosita. Father Gabriel's going to be an only dad. And I was like thinking all these things, and man, they got me. They're playing me like a Stradivarius.
I the gunplay, man, in this, like, Judith blasts the guy, doesn't double tap him, which is a mistake. And
but
then Gabriel,
she's nine.
Okay, but she's got other people around her. Like, there's an adult in that crowd. I saw her.
But she's the one protecting. Like, she's the protector in this group. And she should have definitely double tapped him. But like, I also don't think she shoots Rick's gun that often, right?
Probably not.
Yeah, it's a 44 Magnum, man. That's it is a 44 Magnum, I think.
It's a big gun. Yeah.
That's an intimidating gun for a kid to shoot. I don't know. And plus, like, you hit him like that thing blew like a thread spool size hole through the door. And if you hit him dead set in the chest, like, you would expect him to die. Like, I mean, I get it. Like, he should have blah, blah, blah. But he is flesh and blood, right?
Sure. You don't expect the walkers to be wearing something like a bulletproof vest.
Which I think
crazy.
He pilfered from the dudes he killed first, right? Like, I don't think came strapped like that. I think that was something he pulled off the Alexandrian guards.
Wait, so we missed the scene where he strips down, like he takes off all the layers of muck that he's wearing.
Well, what do you think he's doing? Waiting for those guys to rise, you know? Yeah, he's pulling armor and covering his chest and his junk and his shins. Yeah, he's just getting busy.
I can't imagine. but the worst gunplay here is Father Gabriel missing with a shotgun at like 10 feet. I don't know. As Beta runs off into the woods, I'm like, holy
shit. Yeah, Beta
shoot.
Like Naratu runs off too. He's like, you know, like they do that thing where he's like almost Captain America fast all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of, but it's dark and who knows, maybe it's 30, like, I see. Yeah. It's the thing. If you read like gun report, like after shooting reports and military stuff, it's actually crazy how often people miss in those situations because you're panicked and you're jacked with adrenaline. And, you know, it's like it's just some crazy statistic. Like, out of every 100 bullets shot in a theater of war, like one or two will hit something that it's intended to, because most people are just panic firing and like firing for effect and all, you know, because they just want to get shot and the other guy's doing their damnedest to kill you too. So I always take that stuff with a grain of salt.
Yeah. One other detail that I liked a lot, and maybe is just a coincidence, I'm not sure, but when this whole thing goes down and they realize the army of the dead is upon them, Rosita shouts, go like check out Morgan Street. I'm like, oh, is that named after Morgan or is that just a coincidence?
Did you
probably
know?
Named after the character, I assume.
It's tough to say, but like, I think, yeah, if why would you shout out Morgan Street if you, but why would they call that? And why would they name it Morgan Street?
Why do they name it Ronald Reagan Highway? Why do they name it?
I thought all those streets had names because it was an existing subdivision. So you'd probably keep whatever names they came with. Right. Why would you rename it to be like Rick Street or Morgan Street?
Because it's a new world, think, like, man.
During the wolf invasion, did he do like, you know, I feel like he did something on that spot with the wolf. With a staff or I don't know, maybe they like if
that's
I
where
was
he decided not to kill again.
Yeah, if I gave, yeah, for the 10th, if I gave a little bit more shit about season 6 through 8 of The Walking Dead, I probably would have remembered. And again, it's one of those things where I almost looked it up, but I'm like, I don't want to get spoiled. I don't want to go on The Walking Dead wiki and find out Gambit gets killed next episode. So if you know, hey, if you know and you're listening, you're watching, leave us some feedback live at stereo.com/baldmove. I would love to know.
All right, let's move on to Alpha and Daryl both waking up later that night, both in very bad shape. Alpha says some stupid whisperer bullshit. I don't know. When she starts up with her shit, I just kind of tune out. Daryl says, hey, you didn't love Lydia, which is why you lost her. And that motivates Alpha to get up, but that does not last long. She flops down face first on the ground. And when she wakes, Lydia's there. And Alpha sings her the Lydia song and asks her, you know, to kill her, essentially. She doesn't. Instead, she goes over and saves Daryl. And when Alpha wakes in the morning, she finds a message with her knife that says, "Your way is not the only way."
Pretty cool. It's a great, they've done enough in the last few episodes where, like, sometimes when they do these dreamlight sequences, I can't quite tell if they're going to go the Carol route. Where someone's just legitimately hallucinating or it's going to be real. And same thing with Sadiq, like they play with this a lot. And I think it's a very nice texture to add to the show, that quite quasi unreality, as long as they don't abuse it, because it was effective. I was wondering for a lot of the scene, you know, whether she is real or not. I thought like her, you know, Alpha wanting her to kill her and take over the pack. And her completely misinterpreting why she was there was great. Like this was just, this is an ultimate defeat for Alpha, and the way this feeds into the end of the episode, making her look even more delusional and insane and vulnerable, I think was a nice touch because Alpha is not invincible. She's not.
Even if she wants to be.
And I don't fault Lydia for not killing her mom because like, as she says to Daryl, is that something you could do to your dad? And Daryl couldn't fucking answer because, you know, we saw what a hard time he had with Merle. It's good. And I think they do a really good job of the Alpha dialogue because you said it's unhinged and it's supposed to be, it's cult speech, but it's got that kind of like, you know, recognizable cadence and seductiveness and, you know, unhinged, but internally inconsistent.
Yeah. That confusing quality to it that is meant to sort of, you know, get you to forget yourself and view yourself as one of them.
Like Gamma said, you know, she's got this way of, you know, affecting how you think, affecting your speech. And she's trying to get in under Daryl, you know, building common ground with them. I know you've got pain and that's what made us strong. And she's actually, I don't know that she knows this about Daryl. Is she's able to sense this in other people, like this woundedness that like that Beta's got and that, yes, Daryl's got and Carol has too. And prey on it, like that's some kind of instinct she has, but I think it's a cool affect for her character.
So then Aaron comes back to Alexandria and tells them what happened to his group, and this is where I start thinking, oh boy, we're at the end of the episode and there is no Carol, which would be scary if I didn't know what I know about the future of the Walking Dead franchise. So
right.
That's another thing where I wish I didn't know that much.
Yeah.
But then a caravan with Rosita, Aaron, Gamma, and a bunch of kids heads out. Oh, where are they headed? Do you know?
Rosita's going to Hilltop to be checked out by question mark? The blacksmith?
The new doctor who just rolled into town.
Well, that's what I'm saying. When she said that, I'm like, did they know that Sadiq, like, yeah, I mean, yeah, she does. It's just, yeah, like, there's a whole thing about it. Like, I don't know. Maybe we were wrong and there was always, like, I don't know, a med tech over at Hilltop or something.
Ooh, but,
like,
I mean, yeah, Enid was that. She died. Yeah. I mean, they've had time to do it. They just haven't shown it to us, but.
Yep.
All right, so Rosita in this scene also introduces herself to Gamma, or Mary is her actual name. Hopefully she becomes one of, like we said, one of the townspeople here, one of the survivors.
Yeah. That would be nice.
And then the final scene is Lydia explaining that she was watching Daryl and the Whisperers just kind of hiding out in the woods there, deciding which side to take. Alpha's found by other Whisperers and claims that she's stronger than ever while reciting more of her Whisperer bullshit.
Yep. She's no, like, and she, I notice she keeps saying this. I'm no longer weak. Yeah. You know, when Beta bashes her, when she goes to the thing and she lets Lydia go, she's no longer weak. When Beta comes and destroys Lydia's bed, she's no longer weak. When Lydia fails to take her side, and take control of the house, she's no longer, like, this is, I think Gabriel's on to something about how easy these people are to break. I think he's wrong about how you break them, but and that's
the doubling down, like, when people perceive that you are weak, you know double down and show them that you're not weak. It's in those moments of weakness that you then have to act strong.
She's covered in blood and she can't stand without someone's assistance. Mm-hmm. And she's like, ah, God, as she's getting up, but she's not. No, she's no longer weak.
Right.
And it's starting to feel like empty threats. Our horde will butcher them. And because we don't also, like, Carol did something with the dynamite. Like, is their herd like half strength now? Like, that's a lot of collapsing cave and a lot of zombies in that cave collapsing.
Yeah.
I wonder what the true strength is. But then again, you know, Alexandria, what they lose, like half a dozen people at
probably.
Least.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's the body counts are adding up on both sides. This is a real shooting war. There's been a cold war up to now, but like there's some body counts starting to rack up.
And I do wonder, like, we got 6 episodes left in the season. What could they do that's going to prolong this thing? Because if you're Alpha, you got to be thinking, okay, well, the transgression is real. I now have to unleash the horde.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe she doesn't have enough of a horde, or maybe the horde has been reduced enough that it's not actually an existential threat to Alexandria anymore.
Or it's sealed off behind a lot of rock that's going to take them. Like, I wonder if we'll be treated like, you know, keep cutting back to Alpha, dig harder, dig faster. And,
yeah, then passing and rocks to each other.
Yeah, they're passing right. And you can hear the horde, like, angrily growling louder as they get closer to it. But they're, like, trying to taunt. Like, that could be a nice where. But the thing, the problem with that is, like, they're at a fixed location now. Mm-hmm. And Alexander could come in strength and wipe them out. So how do you keep them on the heels about that for 6 more episodes? I don't know. I'm pretty excited to see, because I also think there might be another skirmish or two. Like, this was the first, like, you're like really big battle. And I don't know, man. Do you think that, like, the last episode or two will just be like all the communities besieged simultaneously as we're desperately cutting back and forth within the defensive Hilltop and Oceanside and Alexandria? And
I would assume that the culmination of the season will be, the Horde attacking.
One thing I think would be a likely next step that would be exciting, but not feel like filler is, like, you know, remember when you fucked up in Star Control 2 and, like, one of the Urquan, the one, and then they just started going around the galaxy and, like, a spy and just wiping out all the species, and the game was already over. You could keep playing it, but, like, eventually the galaxy would go extinct. Like, what if the Horde, like, they can't attack simultaneously, so they go, Oceanside, to my knowledge, doesn't have, like, robust defenses. Like, it doesn't have walls.
No.
And we don't spend a lot of time there, and we don't care about a lot of people there, but we also have some named characters that could flee its ultimate devastation and be witnesses. Like, you could spend an episode or two just ransacking Oceanside, And then the threat's on, like, oh God, like Alexandria is next, or Hilltop. And maybe Alexandria gets overwhelmed. They have to fall back to Hilltop. You could fight, like, there's six episodes to go. What, three cities? Negan's out there doing shit.
Yeah.
Negan's out there.
Yeah, sure, like Connie and Magna. You can cut away from the action for a while. Yeah.
Absolutely. Now it's starting to feel like overstuffed. How are we going to do all this in six episodes, Jim?
Yeah, I didn't think about all the people. I just put some laser pump focus the on the horde threat.
Yeah.
I'm Gabriel.
You're moving
here.
Too fast, Walking Dead. Pump the brakes. It's too much. Too much excitement.
Yeah. You're right. There's a lot to deal with in this season. And are they just, you think next season they're just going to bring Maggie back, like, out of the blue? Like, she's going to show up? Or are they going to do something this season to start to lean that direction?
It makes a lot of sense that the person Eugene's talking to is actually part of the Maggie project.
Yeah. And Michonne's out on the fucking island, right? Like, the naval base. There's a lot to do.
They got weapons. There's, like, all these things. So, like, it could, like, there could be, like, this, like, you know, eventually the Maggie finds out that Alexandria's in trouble. And, like, I mean, there could be some crazy shit, like helicopter gunships coming in the finale. Like, this could really cool. Are we still holding that hope that Eugene will build a nuke from the spare naval explosives and the radioactive core of the satellite?
Yeah,
and
why not?
Yeah, like this. I mean, I don't know how cool it's going to get, but, like, yeah, there's a lot of moving pieces and things that could break for our plucky heroes in favor late in the game that they kind of want us, I think, to forget about. So it'll be a surprise. Yeah. We'll see.
All right, that's it for the episode.
Yeah, if you've got some long form feedback, you can send it to watchingdead@baldmove.com. We'll be considering that stuff at the end of the season. Season 10, before we get into the six bonus episodes, and then it'll just be a couple weeks until we're to live Walking Dead. You also, speaking of that, you can watch us live, record every Tuesday on twitch.tv/baldmove at 1 p.m. simultaneously rebroadcast to stereo.com/baldmove. And if you want to give us feedback to consider after that show, we'll do that. And that's what forms our feedback episode that comes out later in the week. So we're about to do that right now. The feedback episode, if you're listening to the podcast, will be out in a couple days. Thanks for listening. Having a lot of fun this season. Can't wait to see what happens next week. Please join us there on The Watching Dead. And until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.